Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, October the 16th, 2009. Please mind the gap between the end of the marketing year and the start of harvest. We'll explore why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio are Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Before we get started with the program today, just a reminder that we're in the midst of our fund drive for Illinois Public Media. If this program, Commodity Week, is something you wait for each and every week and listen to, then maybe it's something you might be willing to pay just a bit of money for. Please, if you get the opportunity, visit willpledge.org or dial this number, 217-244-9455, and pledge your financial support for Commodity Week. We'd like to start at $100. If you can do that at 217-244-9455, just about 50% of the money that's used to produce Commodity Week comes from you, the listener. Dial in now and thank you very much at 217-244-9455. Let's start our program with this question. Bill Mayer, are you okay with making cash sales at this point with the pop in the corn price?
Yes, I certainly am. I think we actually talked about this some when we did some of the summer meetings there in August with Dave went around, that we could see this opportunity if the harvest drug out as far as getting started long enough and to be looking for an opportunity if it occurred, and I think that we are seeing it, and I think we have to look at it as an opportunity to make some sales, and I think that you should take advantage of that, especially from a cash basis standpoint. It's awfully hard to especially pay the commercial storage if you need to get more sales made.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing. He's right here in Champaign. Greg Johnson is with the Anderson, kind of like asking the cat if it's okay to eat the mouse, Greg. But what do you think? Should they be making cash sales?
Well, you have to remember the farmers didn't have much sold ahead of time. In fact, a lot of them were holding on to old crop corn going into this fall harvest. So, yes, this is a good time to increase those sales. You know, unless you're really getting, you know, a high percentage sold. But I really do think that, you know, we've had a nice 50-cent rally in corn, a dollar-cent rally in beans, and we should always reward the market on those kind of rallies. Not to say that we can't go higher later on, but these are good prices, much better than we were. And, yes, we should be selling some at this point.
And Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in your debut show for Commodity Week. You okay with making the cash sales?
Yes, we've been working diligently to get it caught up to the 75% level. These are good value levels. A lot of guys basically were real reluctant early on to make the sales. So we're just working hard to get up to that 75% level and reward the market, like Greg said.
Bill, thanks for coming to the show. Tell me a bit about yourself to begin with, please.
I guess I grew up under the influence of the Chicago Board of Trade. My dad was a trader in Chicago for over 25 years. Then basically went to Purdue and knew what I wanted to do. Lived on some family ground just outside of Chalmers, Indiana. And I'm an original partner with Risk Management Commodities.
Greg, I started the show with if you've traveled to London or you've heard very much about London and the underground, there's a little saying you hear it constantly once you get on that underground tube, mind the gap. And I use that simply because we're not used to having a time frame between the end of the marketing year or when the crop is really old crop is running out and the time that the new crop corn is coming in. How much different is it for the elevator operator to be working under these conditions?
Well, we've had to incent farmers to bring in corn. Normally, when we sell an October train or a last half October train, you have plenty of corn on hand because harvest is probably halfway through. This year, corn harvest is less than, I think, 6% done according to the USDA statistics.
For the state of Illinois.
For the state of Illinois, 6%. So basically, there is very little corn that's been harvested, and the trains still show up in October, and they need to be loaded. So from an elevator's point of view, we have to do some things like quick shipment premiums, reduced drying rates, things to try to get farmers to harvest corn early. Same way with beans, except with beans, you can't really incent the farmers to do too much. If they're not ready, they're not ready. So that's been a big issue here in October thus far, is trying to find enough grain available to load those October trains.
Bill Mayer, most farmers have found themselves, and everybody here on today says, yeah, go ahead and sell the cash. I don't think that's really changed very much in the last 3 weeks. But most farmers find themselves in when they're sitting on the couch or at the kitchen table or at their desks instead of in the combine seat, find themselves a bit more bullish the price of corn than they would have been a month ago, despite the fact that we've rallied some 70 cents or thereabouts. December corn this week, by the way, finished at 372. It was up 9 3/4 with a high of 388 3/4 and a low at 364 3/4. So we're up roughly 70 cents from the 8th or 9th day of September or thereabouts. But they're still thinking that the crop that's there, that USDA has pegged close to 13 billion bushels, is maybe not that big. Are they wrong about the size of the crop and wrong to be bullish?
Well, I guess I'd say, Todd, a couple of things here. Number one, this one, right out of the chute here, this one is tough to gauge because, as Greg said, we haven't typically been in this situation before. So it is hard to gauge. But I think that I see nothing within the last 10 days that tells me that the crop isn't there. Granted, it's definitely going to be a long, drug-out harvest, and it's going to be hard to get in. But you have to assume that we will eventually get it in. And from what I've heard of those people who are going, the yields seem to be pretty good. So I'm not sure that the USDA is off the mark as far as what's out there.
Now, right about now, there will be a whole bunch of people saying, but the test weights are really not there at this point, won't they? I think farmers will be thinking that's one of the things because they see some of those test weights.
Yeah, we do have some damage problems. We do have which leads to some test weight problems and just test weight problems in general. But I'm not sure that we've got enough of the crop in that we can really make a judgment that it's going to be that way through the rest of the harvest.
All right. So I led you just a little bit. Yeah. You know the reason why, because I talked to Emerson Nafziger on Friday morning, and he had several things that he wanted to talk about. Test weights he wanted to talk about in general. And this is about a minute and 40 seconds of that interview. There must be 27 minutes or something along those lines where Emerson's talking. We'll put that in our weekend newsletter. You can subscribe to that newsletter. It's free at willag.org. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page, and you can listen to the entire interview, the raw interview with Emerson. Here's just a little bit of what he had to say about test weights.
But one of the questions people have had, because we're so unused to the idea that all of our corn's coming out of the field at 30% plus or minus a few percentage points, is whether those test weights are actually accurate when they're measured on high moisture corn. We know that the test weight of a lot of corn that's at 30% moisture is typically going to be lower than it will be after that corn is dried. It's not always the case. There is some corn that's damaged, for example, that just inherently has a low test weight capability, and sometimes when you dry that down, its test weight may not go up very much. As a general rule of thumb, though, if it's sound kernels, that their only problem is they have high moisture, we expect the test weight to go up as you dry corn about a pound for every 4 points of moisture. The data that support that are really old, apparently, but there are charts around that some people use to apply, and it comes out to be about that. That would mean that at 28%, say down to 15, you lose 13 points of moisture, and you ought to be picking up somewhere around 3 pounds per bushel. I think the only way to make sure that you don't get it discounted if it's 30% moisture and is only running at 52 when you take it to the elevator is probably to dry it yourself. And in most cases, that's going to bring the test weights up.
To dry it yourself, and in the most case, you can bring your own test weight up. Well, I guess maybe we ought to let you dispute whether the elevator is giving you a wet weight or a wet test weight or a dry test weight first, because if I don't, you might get a lot of calls at the Andersons on Saturday and Sunday and Monday and Tuesday and whenever. So how do you figure it at the Andersons?
Well, the corn that's coming in now obviously is very wet, 28 to 30% moisture, and it will pick up test weight as we dry it down. This has not been a problem in the last 10 years because the corn's been coming out of the field dry. So it is an issue this year, but there was very little corn planted in April. So hopefully as we get the beans done in the next 10 days to 2 weeks and then switch over to corn, that corn will have dried down to where the test weight will be fine even at 25% moisture. But if for whatever reason corn doesn't dry down, or farmers take it off at 28 to 30% moisture, that test weight is going to be a little bit lower, and there may be some test weight discounts below 54 pounds.
Yeah, one other note from Emerson, and I remember this from a portion of that interview, that his suggestion was that, you know, we move through the month of October and into November. November tends to be wetter than October, but just the moisture content in the air, and that once we end the maturity cycle for corn, whether that's naturally or by a freeze, that it will be at moisture content will be whatever the moisture content of the air is, and so it will go up and down each and every day at that point. But it's not likely to get very dry, I suspect. So we'll have to deal with that all the way through. I think the next question then is back to the question of, is there a 13 billion bushel corn crop out there? Because obviously the three of you and many other must believe that that really is the case if cash sales need to be made on this bump. Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, we generally feel that the variability of the crop is very significant. Starting out the early yields, the stuff that was planted in April, like Greg was talking about, is relatively important. As we get deeper into the harvest and get a better sample of what kind of corn quality we have, what kind of moisture levels, can we really bring those moisture levels down to 25 or 22% naturally, will make a big difference. Our concern is that some of the corn crop that was maybe damaged or froze is not going to dry down quite as easily as we want it to, and that's going to make it a lot tougher going forward.
Greg, is the crop there according to the Andersons?
I think here in central Illinois it is. I can't speak for everywhere else, but you know, you have to remember too, if we take off extremely wet corn, the farmer is bringing, you know, if it really is 200 bushel corn out there, the farmer may bring in 225 bushels of wet corn. Now that gets shrunk down, but the 200 bushels of dry matter is still there. You know, we pay off of pounds. It's not a volume thing. It's a poundage thing. And so if the bushels are really there, if the pounds are really there, which I think they are in our area, you know, the farmer is just basically hauling a little bit extra water. He's paying to haul water, but eventually he's going to get his 200 bushel corn.
Yeah, and one other thing, and while I know you probably are about the same rate that the state of Illinois is, or 5%, 5 or 6% on the harvest, total number of bushel you're going to take in, have you seen much damage in that grain?
We've seen some damage in the April planted corn. And we're trying to figure out why. Farmers are trying to figure out why. Seed companies are trying to figure out why. There's a myriad of theories out there. Is it corn on corn? Is it variety specific? Did the birds eat, peck the ears at the end of the field? Because that seems to be where the damage is greater, on the edges of the field. Was it because of the wet weather? I mean, there's a whole bunch of theories, and we don't really know for sure. We're just hopeful that most of the corn that got planted in May will not have the problems that we've seen so far with the April planted corn.
We'll explore theories on marketing and soybeans when we return here on Commodity Week. Just a reminder that this program is funded in part by you. In fact, about 50% funded by you, the listener. Please do dial in with your support at 217-244-9455. Dave Dickey, the director of Agricultural Programming in Illinois Public Media, and I both suggest the $100 or $120 level. But dial in now at 217-244-9455, and thank you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois residents suffered through a damp, dreary, and cold week, more like mid-November rather than early October. Temperatures this week were much below normal, ranging from 9 degrees below normal in southern Illinois to as much as 16 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois. High temperatures remained in the 40s to low 50s this week, when they should be in the upper 50s north to the upper 60s south. Only northern Illinois has experienced a hard freeze so far, and that occurred last weekend. Cloudy skies kept minimum temperatures for most of this week in the upper 30s to the 40s. It was another wet week across the state, except for far northern Illinois, which received slightly below normal rainfall. Producers were able to get into fields early this week for a short time before the next wave of rain arrived on Tuesday night. Although rainfall amounts the last half of the week were lighter, the rain combined with the cold, damp conditions prevented any more field work from occurring. After another chilly weekend, we should get a break as the weather warms early next week. Southerly winds will kick in by late Sunday, and the warming trend should last at least a few days. High temperatures should reach the 60s by Monday afternoon and remain in the 60s much of the week. It appears we should get several days of dry weather as well. There will be a chance for some scattered showers, especially in northern Illinois late Tuesday or Wednesday, but the next significant chance for rain appears to hold off until the end of the week. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, October the 16th, 2009. Please do dial that number at 217-244-9455 and pledge your financial support to Illinois Public Media. We are listener-supported radio. About half of the financial resources come from you, the listener. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. When we left the earlier part of the program, we were talking about test weight. And I guess there's a difference between test weight and volume, and we have to deal with both in some respect. And there will be a few, Greg Johnson, that suggest that if the test weight isn't there, and I'm not certain that we think anybody here thinks that it's not really there, but that it will be tougher for an ethanol producer to have to get ethanol out of corn, or tougher for the end user, whether that of any sort, domestic livestock, whatever it is, to produce pounds or product at the end out of this corn crop. And from your perspective, is it test weight or volume, or where do we land?
Well, if every bushel was put into a bin, let's say you had a 10,000 bushel bin and you filled it with light test weight corn, you really probably wouldn't have 10,000 bushels, because when you take that out of the bin and take it to the elevator and get it weighed, you're getting paid on pounds, how much that how much is in that bin, not necessarily whether the bin was filled or not. The elevator could care less. So if you have high test weight, on the other hand, 60-pound corn, you may have more than 10,000 bushels in that bin. So the fact that, you know, if we had all the grain stored in bins, we may have less corn, but not all the grain is stored. It's all paid on weight, not volume. So if a lower test weight may reduce the yield a little bit, you know, may reduce the overall size of the crop, but just because the test weight is a little bit lighter doesn't mean that those bushels aren't there, because there may be more bushels. You know, we may have to build more bins, maybe, is what I'm trying to say.
There may be more pounds.
Maybe more pounds there.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
That's a long-winded way of saying that I think it's still there.
I guess the long and the short of it is that 56 is 56, and it looks like the crop's going to be somewhere in normal range, and that ethanol users will use what they normally would use or what they expect to use, and so would livestock producers. Is that sort of the bottom line of it?
Yeah, and I'd say if you're going to look for any kind of an argument to that, watch your disappearance numbers on your quarterly stocks, because if they turn out to be excessively large by comparison, that might tip the hand a little bit.
Let's speak of disappearance. Let's talk about wheat and soft red in particular, and disappearance, I think, in acres, not in bushels. December wheat, 529 top, bottom at 469 and a quarter. Settlement price at 498 and three quarters. It was up 30 and three quarters from last week. July at 540 and a quarter, up 24 cents. You think there'll be enough fewer acres? That's not quite the right grammar to use, but it will be there. Fewer acres drive the soft red winter wheat price higher?
Well, I think that's part of what got into the market this week, but we still have a lot of quantity of wheat around the globe, and I'm not sure that part of what we saw was just a technical reaction to the fact that we probably took it down too far and came back some. I think wheat's kind of gone up here and tested some of its resistance and couldn't get through it, and probably will settle back down here a little bit now.
Anything else on the wheat?
Yeah, we need to get a little bit more competitive on the global market. You know, we started to get there at the lower price levels. Black Sea basis started to firm up. We started to get competitive with France and Russia. And then on this rally, it's basically taken us back above the world market by probably $15 to $18 a ton.
So you're expecting a drop in the wheat market?
We're gonna at least have to pause here, and if there's something significant coming down the road on the demand side, let them catch up to us, or we're going to pull back and join the rest of them.
Another nail in the coffin of corn eventually, too?
Quite possibly, but corn is an independent character right now. I'd treat them all individually.
All right. Soy complex, November beans, 10-12 and a quarter, the high, the low at 965. Settlement price up 13.5 cents at $9.77.5. November of 2010 at $9.74, up 25 cents. So we've had inverses. Beans have been flat across all the months. That generally says, hey, sell it across the scale. Anything different?
No, I would agree with that. In fact, I had a customer this week that had a bin, and we looked at the January price versus the fall, and we actually had a lower price in January. Just didn't really make a lot of sense to put it in the bin and then sell it for a lower price.
The spreads in the cash market are telling you to sell beans. One thing I would mention is the dollar is extremely, extremely weak, and there are a lot of traders that are thinking that we're starting to see what we saw 2 years ago, where people taking money out of equities, taking money out of financial assets and putting them in hard assets or commodities. Look at what gold's done. Look at what oil's done. And I'm not saying we need to get back to the same levels that we got to 2 years ago, but 2 years ago, we had ample stocks, and yet the prices rallied. Why? Because the funds came in and bought. So if the funds come in and buy again because of this weak dollar, because of the fear that China is going to buy commodities, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we can see bean prices and corn prices, for that matter, go higher even with ample stocks.
Yes, and what we've been doing is encourage them to make the across the scales sales as well, replacing ownership with bought calls. You don't know what higher prices are in store for us, but if any of those factors come to realization, we have plenty of upside potential in the beans, and you don't want to get stuck making, you know, price or sales at these levels without some sort of re-ownership on a dollar and a half round.
Yeah, so you're still doing that. It was easier to do that a dollar ago, probably a lot easier to get guys to make pull the trigger on that a dollar ago, too, wasn't it?
It certainly was. When you could get a dollar out of the money call for not too much money, it's a lot easier. But even now, getting the beans sold at these levels with good basis levels and looking what it would cost you to store them, the time value of your money, you can basically replace most of the ownership cost of a bought option just using those two factors alone.
I would agree with that, Bill, and I think going back to the corn as well, I think the same thing applies. You want to have ownership in both commodities. It's just a matter of the cheapest ownership right now isn't cash ownership. It's through call options or some kind of ownership through the futures market.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I know this is much tougher to do because you don't know where everybody is, but on corn, how much of the crop do you think you should have marketed at this point? And how much would you bring them up to if they aren't at that point? So should they be 50% sold, and then how much are they covered on? Where do you?
Well, that's pretty hard to just put a percentage on it. We would probably say a little bit over that 50% mark. But I think the key right now is the focus on the corn side of it and beans as well. To focus on your cash flow needs from now through the beginning of the year and get yourself covered in that situation. And of course, look at your, you know, what you're putting on the farm versus what you're putting in the commercial storage, and that's going to affect your decision somewhat too. So I'm not sure I can say a hard percentage there, but I'd rather have more sold than not.
We've pretty much got 75% of both corn and beans, and we're kind of pushing them to those levels right now. The re-ownership is pretty important, but we're taking that on a case-by-case basis. To get past 75%, I think, given the variables that we're dealing with, would be a stretch. And now that we see the variability that we're seeing, it probably wouldn't hurt to have a little bit in your hip pocket going forward.
And, Greg, one note on the beans. Is there any worry that, one, they won't get it out of the field, two, that the bean crop, and boy, it's much tougher on beans when they stand than I think than it is on corn. Are they worried very much yet about shatter? Does anybody have any idea at this point? It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, constant wetting and drying and re-wetting and drying will cause the pods to burst open and shatter, cause shatter loss. We haven't had a lot of the drying yet. It's just they've just been wet and they've stayed wet. If for some reason, you know, we get a 3 or 4 day window to dry beans and then they get wet again, yeah, every time that happens, we could have a loss. But at this point in time, the farmers just physically have not been able to get to the beans. So, you know, we can worry about it all we want, but we couldn't have done anything differently. The beans weren't ready, and hopefully now we can get a little window and get them done. But that eventually could be a problem.
Well, time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I guess maybe to sum up what we talked about today, it looks to me like the situation we're in right now is, at this point, is more of a logistics problem trying to get the crop in than it is an overall quantity problem. And we'll see as we move forward whether that changes, but I believe that's kind of the situation we're in right now.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons?
Yeah, I would agree with Bill on the corn, and I'll just talk about beans for a second. South America, we didn't talk about South America, but they are going to be planting more acres. So if they plant more acres and if we plant more acres next spring and if we both have big crops, we could go from a relatively tight carryout to a big carryout. So we want to sell beans on these rallies. $9.50 new crop beans for fall of 2010 out of the field, $10 for this old crop would be a good place to sell. But just keep in mind that, you know, we had good prices 2 years ago and the prices kept going higher, good supplies and the prices kept going higher. So, you know, these are good prices, but they can go higher, and there are strategies that allow you to lock in a floor but yet participate in the upside.
And Bill Gentry.
Yeah, continuing with what Bill was talking about on the logistics, you know, when we look at our drying capacity of the countryside or even the commercial facilities, and as wet as this crop is, it's going to be a real challenge to work that many bushels through the system, especially when you've also got some considerations that beans are going to need to be dried too in some areas. So we've got a bottleneck.
And that is this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.